This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verse 255 of chapter Baqarah recited by Mr. Ali Askar Burumand.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahu la ilaha illa huwa لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات وما في الأرض من ذا الذي عنده إلا بإذنه لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم له ما في السماوات والأرض من ذا الذي يشفع عنده إلا بإذنه يعلم ما بين أيديهم وما خلفهم ولا يحيطون بشيء من علمه إلا بما شاء وسع كرسيه السماوات والأرض ولا صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Allah is He, besides whom there is no God, the ever-living, the self-subsisting, by whom all subsist. Slumber does not overtake Him, nor sleep. Whatever is in the heavens and whatever is in the earth is His. Who is He that can intercede with Him but by His permission? He knows what is before them and what is behind them, and they cannot comprehend anything out of His knowledge except what He pleases. His knowledge extends over the heavens and the earth, and the preservation of them both tires him not, and He is the Most High, the Great.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran once again rejects Ukraine's allegations about supplying Russia with weapons, saying undocumented accusations cannot help resolve the Ukraine crisis. Palestinian officials say Israel is fully responsible for the current escalation in the West Bank, warning it may lead to an explosion in the situation. Thousands of people take to the streets in the Spain's capital, Madrid, demanding higher salaries amid the country's deepening cost of living crisis. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, Iran has once again rejected the allegations that it provided Russia with weapons to be used in Ukraine, reiterating Tehran's preparedness to help end the conflict. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani stated that emotional comments and baseless accusations would not solve the Ukraine crisis. Kanani urged Ukrainian officials to respond to Iran's call for holding technical meetings with Kiev's military experts on the issue of drones. This is in reaction to the Ukrainian Foreign Minister, Dmytro Kuleba, who accused Iran of supplying arms to Russia. Tehran has already said it is ready for talks with Ukraine to clear things up. Iran has also called for an end to the war in Ukraine, urging restraints on both sides. Let's go live to the Iranian capital, Tehran, marking the anniversary of the day university students took over the U.S. embassy, which had turned into a center of espionage against the newly established Islamic Republic by the late Imam Khomeini. 52 American diplomats were subsequently held hostage. However, documents of wiretapping equipment that was discovered at the embassy was the smoking gun, and the evidence that the students, revolutionary students, had accused the embassy staff of plotting to overthrow the newly established Islamic Republic. And as we've seen over the past decades, on this day, in over 800 cities and towns and villages across Iran and more places, similar scenes will emerge over the day. Western media have shown extremely vast footage of the hundreds of rioters that they claim to be protesters in the Western media, but they did not show the killings and the rioting the firing of businesses and banks and other public businesses, rather focusing on what they claim were protesters instead of rioters. Here are the people of Iran standing up in a show of solidarity against the American foreign policy on this day. So 42 years ago, on November the 4th, contains a multitude of symbolic meanings and realities. Perhaps most importantly of all is the heavy blows that was dealt to the contemporary world order and the US hegemony as it used to be prior to the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The occasion would later go on to be named the day, or the National Day of the Fight Against Global Arrogance. Today also marks National Students Day. Let me bring in Sarbaz Ruhullah, that is Rezavi, an activist and political analyst from Qom. Mr. Rezavi, welcome. What's your take on today's occasion, the sea of people that are coming? But unfortunately, as you know, the West is not going to cover these demonstrations.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum and thank you for having me. As you correctly mentioned and noted to the speech of Ayatollah Khamenei, who talked about the ignition and the starting point of the dispute between Iran and USA, saying that it was not 1979, February 11th, 1979 revolution, but it was years before that, was the August coup against the Iranian the democratically elected government of Dr. Mossadegh, 1953, and it is almost 70 years since 1953. In the 1953 coup, something was really important to notice. The coup was designed by CIA, by America, and it was implemented by BBC. It was BBC that announced the code of the coup, exactly by sending the signal on its radio, giving signal to all the elements inside Iran that it's the time of starting the coup. And after 7 decades, nothing has changed actually at global level. Same thing, same scenarios are going on. Conspiracies against Iran is not ending, not only ending, but also increasing. Some are fed up with this word of American conspiracy against Iran. But what should we do when it is the reality on the ground? Then all the facts on the ground are telling us not only America is decreasing, it's stopping its arrogant policy against the rest of the world, against specifically our region, against the Islamic Republic of Iran, but they are increasing it. Look at it, it's part of the coup. Then later on, America stood with the Ba'ath regime of Saddam Hussein at that time. They helped them with their satellite information when Iran was defending its borders against the Iraqi invasion. We all know that now the evidence is all out. Later on, it continued with the sanctions, brute sanctions against the Iranian people. It all was done by the Americans. Later on, it again continued with supporting the terror group, those who had murdered and assassinated thousands of Iranian people, got shelter in America, got support from the American lobbies, American policies, that they got funds from the American, Pentagon and American security and intelligence services. Later on, it again continued with the direct terror act. Look what America did. They openly terrorized and assassinated General Qasem Soleimani in Baghdad. When you look at the animosity of Americans against Iran, against the Iranian people, and meanwhile, at the same time, America is turning the table against Iran. America is blaming Iran. I mean, the same American regime that did all these atrocities, that committed all these violent acts against Iran and Iranian people, is now standing at international level, international bodies, human rights commission, security council here and there, and shouting against Iran, blaming Iran for the stability of the region, blaming Iran for reason, blaming Iran for acts of evil and all these, accusations that they are doing against us. I mean, they have done 70 years of animosity against Iran and Iranian people, and now they are blaming Iran. And I believe what Malcolm X said more than six decades ago about America and American policies is still valid. No expiry for those words. American democracy is hypocrisy. This is what Malcolm X said. And it is the exact taking place at that time when Malcolm X was fighting for the rights of the civil rights of the black people in America. And he was telling that we are the victims, and now we are being accused by the system in America. And then he said that, golden rule, American democracy is hypocrisy. And the same is still going on. Look at it. America is doing all this, evil acts against the people of the rest of the world, what they call to be themselves, the rest of the world, not actually the rest of the world. The rest of the world are those who are being victimized by America and American policy. And then as pointing towards Iran and blaming Iran and, making propaganda against Iran by the hands of their media. The same as I said at the very beginning of my point, that the coup of 1953 was implemented. It was, organized by the help of BBC. I mean, recent events in the last 40, 50 days of Iranian unrest, you see what Americans are doing, how they are playing the game, then turning the table again against Iran and Iranian people. And of course, I'm sure that today people would see and what real Iranian people who would be at the space, who would be showing their real anger against the policies. We yet believe, I still really believe, I mean, so believe that all the accusations ruled against America. What do you expect if any country involved is facing what Iran faced? What would be the situation of that country? Iran is surrounded by more than 50 American military bases. Those military bases, of course, are decreased. They were more than that before. I mean, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it was more than that. And it's decreasing, of course. But yet we have, I can count you one by one. How many bases in Qatar? How many bases in Bahrain? How many bases in Saudi Arabia? How many bases in the occupied territories of Syria? How many bases in Iraq? How many bases in Turkey? Iran is surrounded by more than 50 bases, military bases. So what should be the situation of Iran? Iran is facing threat. It's not a illusion. It's a real threat. American boots are just next to Iran. Two countries, the big neighbors of Iran, were occupied by American forces. So when you are imposing, putting a country in that condition, then you are blaming Iran and Iranian people for the situation inside Iran. No, no. American democracy, as late Malcolm X said, is a hypocrisy. All American values are hypocrisy, not only democracy.
Absolutely, indeed. Very interesting points, Sarbaz Ruhollah, that is Rezavi, an activist and political analyst from Qom. The spokesman for the Palestinian president has held the Israeli regime fully responsible for the escalation in the occupied West Bank. Nabil Rudaina has warned that Israel's ongoing deadly crackdown against Palestinians could lead to an explosion of the situation on the ground. The remarks follow the killing of four more Palestinians by the regime's forces in Al-Quds, Ramallah and Jenin in less than 24 hours. Israel has recently stepped up its deadly onslaught across the occupied territories. More than 140 people have lost their lives in the West Bank this year alone. Palestinians have repeatedly called on the international community to help end the Israeli blitz in the occupied territories. Israel's former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has returned to power following elections that saw his party and allies win the parliament majority. The Electoral Commission says Netanyahu's bloc of four far-right parties won a total of 64 seats out of the 120 seats, securing the Knesset majority. Outgoing Prime Minister Yair Lapid has conceded defeat and accepted the election results. For years, Netanyahu has been involved in a massive corruption scandal. He's been indicted on multiple bribery and fraud charges. He denies them all. Voting stations opened on Tuesday for the fifth parliamentary election in less than 4 years. The elections were called after a coalition of eight anti-Netanyahu parties led by Lapid's ally Naftali Bennett collapsed in June. The coalition disbanded over defection as the regime struggled to address security and inflation. Our West Bank correspondent Mona Kandil says Israeli troops use lethal force against the Palestinians with no rationale.
Since the beginning of the year, the Israeli aggression continued. Raids storming Palestinian areas had been taking place on a daily basis, whether to arrest Palestinians accused by the Israeli forces for being wanted for security reasons, fighters, and recently the formation of the so-called the Lion's Den. Those Palestinian fighters had been resisting the Israeli forces using armed resistance, of course. But recently we had been witnessing an increase of arrests among the Palestinians, an increase of using lethal force, using the Israeli soldiers had been using their arms in order to shoot and kill, not only to shoot and arrest Palestinians under the different and various, of course, unjustified reasons.
Right, turning elsewhere now, thousands of people have gathered in Spain's capital, Madrid, to demand higher salaries amid the country's deepening cost of living crisis. The demonstration was called by major labor unions. The unions want the government and businesses to agree to raise the minimum wages in the face of rampant inflation. Like many European countries, Spain has seen price hikes due in large part to the war in Ukraine. That brings an end to the World Bulletin for this hour.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
On Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The All-Knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him who thanks him, and disappoints not him who supplicates him, and cuts not off the hope of him who hopes in him. O Allah, I call thee to witness, and thou art sufficient witness, and I call to witness all thy angels, and the inhabitants of thy heavens, and the bearers of thy throne, and thy prophets, and thy messengers, whom thou hast sent out, and the various kinds of creatures thou hast brought forth, that I bear witness that thou art Allah. There is no God but thou, thou alone, who hast no associate nor any equal, and thy word has no failing nor any change, and that Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, is thy servant and thy messenger. He delivered to the servants that with which thou charged him, and he struggled for Allah as is his due. And he gave the good news of the truth of reward, and he warned of the veracity of punishment. O Allah, make me firm in thy religion as long as thou keepst me alive. And make not my heart to swerve after thou hast guided me, and give me mercy from thee. Surely thou art the giver. Bless Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, and make me one of his followers and his partisans. And muster me in his band, and give me the success of accomplishing the obligatory observance of Friday, and performing the acts of obedience which thou hast made incumbent upon me within it, and receiving the bestowal which thou hast apportioned for its people on the day of recompense. Thou, only thou, art the mighty ones.
Of November, National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance. November in the Islamic Republic of Iran has been designated as the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance. In this special program, we examine the significance of this day. Please stay with us. November, both before and after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, reminds Iranians of three important events which occurred in contemporary Iranian history. The three events were the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini's exile on 4th of November 1964 by the Pahlavi regime, the ruthless slaughter of students in Tehran on 4th of November 1978, and a courageous movement of university students in capturing the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the den of espionage, on 4th of November 1979. Each of these three events was in some way related to the government of the United States of America. In November of 1964, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, was exiled because of his opposition to capitulation, which meant preserving the security of American agents in Iran and their judicial immunity from prosecution. So this event was related to the United States of America. On 4th of November 1978, as we approached the final victory of the Islamic Revolution in February of 1979, in the final days of the hated Pahlavi regime, students at Tehran University were attacked by oppressive security forces of the hated Shah. In this bloody attack, 56 students were martyred and hundreds were injured. In honor of these martyrs, this day was named as Students' Day in the history of the Islamic Revolution. Since the Pahlavi regime was supported by the United States of America, this event was also indirectly related to the United States. The event, on 4th of November 1979, was a counterattack a true fight against the global arrogance. Our courageous and religious youth attacked the US embassy and discovered the truth and the true identity of this embassy, which was in effect a den of espionage, and presented this fact to the peoples of the world. The founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, described this important event as a second Islamic revolution, larger than the first revolution. The 4th of November 1979 event was also related to America. These three events were related in different ways to the government of the United States and its relations with Iran. Thus, 4th of November came to symbolize the resistance and the struggle of the Iranian nation against the arrogant powers, and was forever recorded in Iranian history. In the past four decades, in the post-Islamic Revolution era, the United States has carried out many hostile acts, plots, and schemes against Islamic Iran and the Iranian nation. US officials and politicians have admitted that they have supported rioters and vandals on a number of occasions in Iran. The Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, and Mossad have given material support and provided training for rioters who have wreaked havoc in Iran. The depth of America's hostility towards the Islamic Republic of Iran becomes clear with this admission. Infamously, the former US Secretary of State and the former First Lady Hillary Clinton, in her book Hard Choices, pointed to rioting in Iran following the disputed presidential elections of 2009. In her book, Hillary Clinton admitted the Obama administration spent tens of millions of dollars training Iranian rioters in how best to cause destruction in Iran. She writes, "The Obama administration, in the years following the disputed 2009 presidential elections in Iran, spent tens of millions of dollars to train over 5,000 individuals who were opposed to the Islamic Republic. Other US administrations have also done everything in their power to try to coerce and bully the Iranian nation. Donald Trump, for example, unilaterally abrogated the nuclear deal between Iran and the 5+1 group, and imposed stringent sanctions and adopted a policy of maximum pressure against Tehran. As part of this policy of maximum pressure, even medical drugs and medical equipment were sanctioned, targeting Iranian patients and those who were suffering from poor health. In effect, US economic terrorism was targeting ordinary Iranians, including women, children, the elderly, hospital patients, the poor and the less well-off. This maximum pressure policy was imposed for 3 years, from 2018 to 2021. But by the end of Donald Trump's presidency, even members of his own administration had admitted the policy to be a total failure. The resilient Iranian people had successfully withstood America's plots and schemes, just as they have always done. However, one more shameful and disgraceful chapter had been added to the grim and bleak record of US dealings with Iran. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in a speech on 4th of November 2021, exactly a year ago, on the occasion of the National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, referred to the continuing long-standing hostilities of the United States against the Iranian nation, emphasizing, "The Americans have tried every trick in the book and used all means at their disposal to oust the Islamic Republic. they have shown their hostility towards Islam and the principles of the Islamic Republic, plotting, scheming and conspiring in every way that they could. The leader of the Islamic Revolution also referred to a history of US-backed coup d'etats, US-imposed sanctions, US-imposed boycotts, threats, military strikes, inciting riots, causing ethnic tensions, and so on. Mehdi Ali Khani, a political analyst and expert, has also commented on US interference in the internal affairs of various countries and US attempts at regime change by successive Republican and Democratic administrations in Washington. Mehdi Ali Khani says, "Independent countries which refuse to toe the US line throughout the world are invariably targeted by Washington for regime change. All sorts of threats, all sorts of military action and coup d'etats are instigated by Washington to try to install a client government which obeys US orders. From the early 1950s onwards, the US has adopted this approach and this tactic, particularly in third world countries." In further remarks, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has said, "The United States has not changed at all. We see the same malicious intent, the same ruthless, callous behavior, continuing attempts to dominate, to impose its hegemony over independent nations, with even more savagery. The fact of the matter is that America's hostility towards the Islamic Republic has very deep roots. The Americans were slapped in the face by the Islamic Revolution in Iran. They tried everything to turn the clock backwards. They couldn't accept the fact that their hands were cut off from the very rich resources of Iran. This lies at the very heart of their hostility towards Islamic Iran."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
If the ongoing war in Ukraine is prolonged and no ceasefire is reached before the start of next spring, then no doubt the region of West Asia will not be excluded from the heat, which will lead to a shuffle in strategic alliances. The consequences resulting from the outbreak of the war in Ukraine proved the restored importance of West Asia as a region which no power aspiring to unilateral hegemony of the world order can dispense with or refrain from extending its influence towards. This was evident by the emergence of new roles of important West Asian countries such as Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey, and the state of paranoia currently manifesting in the Israeli occupation entity. For instance, Saudi Arabia is one of the most important strategic allies of the United States of America and the Middle East since World War II. However, the war in Ukraine came to cast a negative shadow on that alliance and now threatens to completely break it. U.S. President Biden's resort to the weapon of maximum sanctions against Russia, especially in the field of oil, gave Saudi Arabia a great opportunity to appear as an influential player on the course of the Ukrainian war through its ability to influence the oil market and its prices, thus disturbing the effectiveness of the economic sanctions imposed on Russia. On the other hand, it is noted that Russian-Israeli relations are likely to be negatively and severely affected by the consequences of the war in Ukraine. Several reports emerged indicating that Israel has begun or has already provided various aids to Ukraine, including types of advanced weapons, especially air defense systems, in addition to very important intelligence information, which led to an annoyed reaction on the part of Russia. Moreover, the development of the situation in Ukraine pushed Iran to express its solidarity with Russia and its strategic stance with it. Recently, it was reported that Russia had allegedly bought a large deal of Iranian drones. Both countries denied the allegations, yet it still angered the United States, prompting it to make strong-worded statements warning Iran of the consequences and threatening to impose new sanctions on it. Meanwhile, in Turkey, the growing personal trust between Putin and Erdogan is steadily increasing, especially after Putin's proposal to export Russian gas to Europe via Turkey, turning the latter into a center for storing and redistributing it to Europe, a proposal that Erdogan received with great happiness and enthusiasm. Hence, if the ongoing war in Ukraine is extended and no viable solution is found, then there is no doubt that this will lead to a complete reversal of the pattern of alliances in West Asia. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. The ongoing war in Ukraine has wide-ranging geostrategic repercussions, which are likely to affect various international actors, whatever their sizes or political weights. And since all the influential forces on the international scene, not just Russia and Ukraine, are involved in this war, either directly or indirectly, in addition to the fact that it is a war conducted by various available means and not by force of fire or by military means alone, its effects and repercussions are likely to vary greatly from one region to another and from one country to another. West Asia in particular is likely to have the lion's share of these effects and repercussions, whose goals and orientations often face off to the point of contradiction. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Laith Maarouf, political commentator. Thanks a million for being with us, Laith. It's a pleasure. Much has been said about what the West calls the Middle East, which is West Asia, losing its strategic importance, lee with the United States of America, which at times seemed to be withdrawing from the region gradually, but in reality it was simply attempting to redeploy its forces in the region and changing their locations of concentration and influence all across the world, not just here. But has the conflict in Ukraine proven that West Asia is no longer a hotspot of neocolonial and imperial ambitions?
On the contrary, actually, as you mentioned in your intro, the war in Ukraine is proving is the importance of Western Asia. You know, Ukraine is just a few countries away from Syria. It's the Black Sea, Turkey, and then Syria south of that. We're very close. And of course, the history of the Zionist project begins in Ukraine. Many of our listeners may not remember this, but the Zionist project was birthed in Ukraine, as we see today. The president of Ukraine is a Zionist Jewish president. He is allied with the Nazis on the ground, and the Zionist colony is aligning with Ukraine on those grounds. The region of Western Asia will continue to be the most important piece of territory on this planet because of geography. It is at the crossroads of Asia, Africa, and Europe. It hosts the largest amount of gas and oil in the world, and all the main trading routes pass through it. Any empire that wants to project its power into Africa and Asia has no choice but to control this region. And of course, as we see today, the battle in Ukraine is directly influencing what is happening on the ground in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq, and in Palestine, whether as we see the pressures mounting on the Americans on the ground in Syria with constant attacks by the resistance and or the constant attacks by the Israelis on Syria, and how that is playing between the two major powers in the mm-hmm. world, the United States and Russia.
Well, as you just said now, Leith, the region of West Asia, there's like no power aspiring to unilateral hegemony over the world order can dispense with or can rise above its influence in this region, as evidenced by the emergence of new roles in the region, specifically like in countries like Iran, like Saudi Arabia, like Turkey. And we also seen the paranoia in the Israeli entity, just as you mentioned. They are struggling to maintain their historic plundering of Palestine. How do you see new alliances being formed in West Asia as a direct result of the growing struggle for influence in the region, especially between the United States of America and the Russian Federation?
Of course, the strongest alliance in Western Asia is that of the resistance axis. And the other players that you mentioned, Turkey and Saudi Arabia, are right now in a bind. Their old benefactor, imperial benefactor, the United States, is collapsing. Its power is not being as influential as before, even though that it's not totally collapsed, which means, on the one hand, you see Turkey, which is a large country with a large territory and 90-somewhat million population, is beginning to assert its own influence and its own sphere of influence. And that may be increasing as we speak right now, but also it's increasing the threat of the CIA and MI5, MI6 conducting operations in Turkey to change the regime. Similarly, in Saudi Arabia, which is in a bigger bind than Turkey because it's a smaller country population-wise, and it's also a country that has been 100 years under direct Anglo-American dictate, which means all their agencies, all their ministries, all their security forces are infiltrated to the core, which means that every time now MBS is playing a patriot or a nationalist against American influence, there is a big chance that he will be removed or assassinated, replaced by the Americans.
Because since you mentioned Mohammed bin Salman and that he's playing a patriot, but I mean, how much of that is true? Is it just against the Biden administration, because they started off on the wrong foot to begin with? But is it just against the U.S. current administration, or rather it will surpass it to a strategic alliance between these two countries that have been the most powerful alliance since World War II?
Yeah, this is a little bit harder to gauge right now because, you know, we have to remember in the 1970s during the Arab oil embargo on Europe and so forth, it may have looked like these Gulf countries were doing an oil embargo to support Palestine, but the end result of it was that all the money that these Gulf countries made from the rise in prices of oil were stacked in American and British banks, which created a huge boom for the West. And in reality, those banks, like Citibank and others, didn't have even enough people to lend to, so they started lending to states in Africa and Latin America, and that is where the third world debt comes from the oil money that the Saudis made in the first oil embargo. So today, while it may seem that the Americans and the British are going to suffer because of the increase of oil prices by the Saudis and the Emiratis, it's actually going to bring a lot of money to Western banks. These Gulf countries have no control of their deposits. So I am a little bit doubtful about the effects of Saudi and Biden's spat. It may be all just for television consumption to allow the Saudis to look like they have some say in what they're doing.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us and talking about this, Laith Maruf, political commentator. I wish we had more time to talk about it because it's very, very important to see how things are shifting, especially in the region like West Asia, given the ongoing conflict in Eastern Europe. I want to thank you very much again for being with us. Now, please stay tuned because next we are going to talk about how Palestine is preparing for its third inevitable intifada.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marvo Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The security situation in the occupied West Bank is escalating rapidly. On the ground, the occupation army's operations continue in all areas of the West Bank and occupied Al-Quds through operations of field liquidation of Palestinian civilians, isolation and arrest of political activists of all factions, and the demolition and confiscation of homes, lands, and properties of Palestinians in different parts of the West Bank and Al-Quds. On the other hand, the West Bank is witnessing an escalation in confrontation operations and the response to the incursions of the occupation army. Palestine approaches a third intifada in this following report.
After a long hesitation in undertaking a large-scale operation in the West Bank, in contrast to the one launched by the Israeli entity in 2002, Yair Lapid and Benny Gantz decided to carry out a large-scale aggression against the city of Nablus. A continuous aggression that appears in part motivated by the two men's electoral calculations, which compels them to do anything to face the contradictions with which Benjamin Netanyahu is chasing them. After fear of the repercussions that might result from any major operation preventing them from taking such a step over the past months, despite the escalation and expansion of resistance operations in the occupied territories. On the same level, the pace of individual resistance operations is rising, while Nablus and Jenin are witnessing armed resistance demonstrations reminiscent of the events during the Al-Aqsa Intifada 2000, in addition to the widespread popular participation in the funerals of the martyrs, which indicates latent patriotism, anger, and popular support growing around the option of Palestinian armed resistance. On the security level, the Israeli security reports indicate fears of an explosion in the situation, which were confirmed by Egyptian security intelligence messages sent to the Israelis that the West Bank is boiling on hot tin, while the Palestinian Authority announces its inability to control the situation because of the occupation's measures and its security, financial, and field restrictions. From a political angle, the Palestinian Authority team finds itself in a dead end in terms of any negotiations with the occupation regime, while the Palestinian division continues, which is eroding the social and political fabric and reflecting itself on the absence of the organized political activity of Hamas, Jihad, and the PLO in the West Bank. This erosion made way to the young Palestinian resistance blood to boil, forming a new faction known as Arin al-Usud, which translates into the Lion's Den. In light of the steadfastness shown by the Lion's Den and other emerging military groups and the messages of support they received from the resistance factions in Gaza, young Palestinian resistance fighters were inspired by the recently formed models and martyrs. Today, the Lion's Den can be considered as the starting spark for a large-scale military operation that the enemy leaders decided to launch against the West Bank. It appears that the meeting that took place recently between Prime Minister Yair Lapid, War Minister Benny Gantz, and Shin Bet officials who pledged to eliminate the group witnessed the adoption of the said decision and approved its implementation in the shortest possible time on the eve of the general elections in the entity. Are all these factors conducive to the outbreak of a third intifada? From an objective point of view, yes, the overall conditions that the Palestinian lives are in an appropriate recipe for the ignition of the battleground. However, the Palestinian division still weighs heavily on all the people and the factions. The Palestinian organizations lack effectiveness and field capacity in the West Bank and Al-Quds because of the absence of their tools, their bodies, and their organized networks, which are constantly targeted with arrests and security pursuits.
Now to discuss this issue with us from Damascus is Vanessa Bealey, independent journalist and photographer. Thanks a million for being with us, Vanessa, from Damascus, to talk about this pressing issue right now, especially in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. Now, the pace of individual Palestinian resistance operations is rising in the West Bank, while we see Nablus and Jenin are witnessing armed resistance demonstrations, which is something of a reminiscence of the events during Al-Aqsa Intifada in the year 2000. That's 22 years ago, in addition to widespread popular participation in the funerals of the martyrs that are being killed by the Zionist entity, which also indicates latent patriotism, anger, and also popular support growing around the option of resistance. Are these events and repercussions enough to brew a third Palestinian Intifada, Vanessa?
I think we've seen an escalation of resistance against the Zionist entity, but also a coming together of the resistance factions, which has not been seen before. 2 weeks ago at the Algiers conference, there was a declaration of unity between the various resistance factions. And I think what we saw in Nablus, when there were, in Nablus, there were five martyrs, two of whom were not even involved in the armed insurrection against the invading and occupying Zionist forces. And one martyr from Ramallah, as far as I know. We saw the coming together of the resistance forces, both inside Nablus and reinforcements coming from Jenin to the aid of their comrades in Nablus. This is something that we really haven't seen on this scale for a very, very long time. As you said, we've seen disconnected, violent resistance against the occupying forces, but we haven't seen this level of unity. And what I thought was quite extraordinary was to see Syrian flags flying in Nablus during the funeral procession. And that is definitely an indication to me, particularly with the meeting recently in Damascus between President Assad and the leaders of the Hamas political arm. We're seeing now a really strong desire by the resistance axis to bring together all the factions that have been fighting for the liberation of Palestine. I find that very inspiring at the moment.
Well, on the security level, Vanessa, the Israeli security reports indicates fear of what they call an explosion in the situation, which actually was confirmed by Egyptian security intelligence messages sent to the Israeli regime, that the West Bank is simmering while the Palestinian Authority announced its inability to control the situation. Oh, that was a surprise. But as a result of the occupation's measures and its security and its financial and also field restrictions against the PA, it baffles me that the PA still wants to, quote, control the situation, unquote. What is the real weight of the Palestinian Authority on the ground in Palestine as the occupied territory seems to be taking matters into their own hands as we speak?
Absolutely. I think now you're seeing the resistance factions. The authority is now horizontal across all the resistance factions. It's not top down. So the PA, unless it wants to be left completely marooned and isolated as a Zionist ally, at some point it's going to have to make a decision. We've seen already that I think the PA security forces involved in solidarity with the Lion's Den and the other resistance factions that have come to the foremost in these battles. But I think what's also, coming back to the Syria axis, I think what is extraordinary that I just happened to pick up that these escalations in resistance against the Zionist occupation forces comes at a time that Israel has been targeting defense capabilities here in Syria in the last few days. Mm-hmm. So for me, I wonder, and it's been confirmed by a few military researchers and people here on the ground, that what we might also be seeing is retaliation against what they perceive to be now the resistance axis. So attacks on Syria may well see an escalation on attacks against the Zionist forces inside the occupied territories or even from Gaza itself. So as I say, I think now we're seeing a precedent being set, whether it will be an equivalent to previous intifadas or perhaps it will be an even more powerful. As a
Levantine, that's music to my ears, Vanessa, definitely. But the overall conditions, unfortunately, in which the Palestinian lives are a suitable recipe for the ignition of an actual intifada, but the Palestinian division still weighs heavily on the entire people and the factions, especially the factions in Gaza, for that matter. What do you think is still missing for a full-fledged Palestinian intifada to hit the Zionist occupation from the river to the sea?
I think what is missing, but I think now it's starting to come into focus, has been this idea of unity, of everyone standing behind the ideology that Palestine will be free. And I think now what you're seeing, again, is an unprecedented situation where Israel is facing multiple fronts. It's facing the Syrian front, it's facing the Gaza front, it's facing the Hezbollah front, during which, of course, it recently surrendered its rights to some degree on the Karish gas line, but it surrendered in a more symbolic way in the sense that it had to come to the negotiating table because it was effectively afraid of escalation, military escalation with Hezbollah. But it's also facing, of course, the Yemeni front. Yemen now has developed
Definitely.
Missiles that can target Israeli cities. So, you know, Israel now is, in my view, with America very much bogged down in Ukraine and with its attention elsewhere, Israel is being more and more isolated. And I think the more that Israel is isolated, the more unified the resistance will be because they will see the weakness in their enemy that has not been visible for decades now due to the protection given to it by its allies in the West. So I think, you know, we're seeing finally a big chink in the Zionist armor, and I hope that the Palestinian resistance factions and their allies in Iran and Syria, and their growing number of allies, actually, let's not forget that Kuwait has recently prevented Israelis traveling through its own airspace. So we're seeing a big shift, in my view.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is certainly an amazing view for the acts of resistance in the region, but in less than a minute, don't you think that this would actually prompt the Zionist entity to take a decisive, maybe aggressive incursion against any part of the West Bank that might lead into something that we saw in 2002 in Jenin, for example?
Yes, of course. You know, what does the Zionist entity do whenever it is threatened? It replies with disproportionate force.
Massacre.
But as I say now, it's starting to look desperate. Look, Israel can't or refuses to supply weapons to Ukraine, and yet the Zionists have a huge presence in Ukraine proper, in Western Ukraine. So why can't they supply weapons to Ukraine? Why can't they join this axis, this neo-Nazi axis that the US and the UK is leading? Perhaps because they don't have the armament spare to actually give to Ukraine. Perhaps because they are feeling threatened and cornered in their own part of in their own region.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, this is okay, they may be able to retaliate against West Bank, against Jenin, against Nablus. But the arms are coming into the Palestinian resistance factions in the occupied territories and into Gaza. And so far, despite their multiple aggression against Syria, they've been unable to prevent that happening. And they've been unable to effectively target both Syrian defense capability and Syrian offense capability.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that.
Wow. Definitely, times are changing and really fast. I want to thank you very much, Vanessa Bealey, independent journalist and photographer, joining us from Damascus to talk about this very important and historic event that is going on in Palestine. And thank you. Do wait for us next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
In the limelight.
The Brazilian people, along with anti-imperialist activists and politicians, as well as environmental advocates, are now happy at the victory of Lula da Silva as the elected president of Brazil because of his pragmatic policies and a strong opposition to U.S. hegemony. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's victory in the country's presidential election, which one climate policy journalist called the most important climate election of the year, yielded a hopeful response from environmental defenders as they celebrated an end in sight for President Jair Bolsonaro's destructive policies in the Amazon rainforest. Da Silva, who is commonly called Lula, spoke directly in his victory speech about protecting